Hello and welcome to the second series of the King's Cast. Issues of mental health and well-being have become increasingly prominent in our society, and the term can be bandied around with little understanding. We come across a wide range of myths and misconceptions around definitions, diagnosis, and treatment or strategies. Here to discuss this with me are Mary Franklin Smith, founder of Light of Mind, and Tom Halliday, assistant head teacher at the King's School. Welcome to you both.
Thank you so much. Hi.
So to get us started, Tom, would you give us a couple of definitions about key phrases we often hear around this topic?
Yeah, of course. I think it's quite interesting when you hear the term mental well-being and mental health, really. And I feel there's misconceptions around both of the kind of definitions around them. But for me, it's a process that I've kind of learned over the last few years from speaking to Mary and from doing a little bit of reading around it, in particular in lockdown when I know it was quite rife in terms of people's understanding about it, actually. And I feel for me, mental well-being and mental health are two separate entities. I feel mental health is very much like a medical and a doctor's kind of understanding around it. So what I mean by that is if I break my leg, I'll go and see a doctor to make sure my diagnosis and my rehabilitation is right for that. I think it's exactly the same for mental health. I think there's professionals out there who are very, very well trained to help us kind of recover and rehabilitate kind of our mental health from that. From a mental well-being point of view, I feel that's slightly different. And for me, how I look at it, it sits on a continuum, how that can fluctuate based on a number of different things, whether I'm hungry, angry, lonely, I don't know, any kind of these emotions that we feel every day. And ultimately, for me, mental well-being is about how we are resilient to certain situations, how we respond to certain situations, whether that's good or bad, and actually the mechanisms that we've got to be able to control that and to overcome these barriers that life throws at us. So just to kind of summarise, I think mental health is around more about kind of a diagnosis with doctors and psychiatrists, etc. Whereas I think mental well-being is something we can help to self-regulate, understand and build our resilience and to overcome that and actually understand it's okay to have bad days. But actually improving our mental well-being will help us tomorrow be better than today.
Thank you very much. Can I follow that up with, in your experience, certainly in school, do you think there are any common misconceptions that you come across?
Yeah, absolutely. We did quite a lot of work with all students last year from year 7 right through to year 11. That was we did a couple of focus groups with our student leadership groups. We did whole form kind of research projects into what mental health, mental well-being is. And there's a lot of misconceptions around that. Actually, from kind of the things that I've mentioned, and a little bit of a misunderstanding of how we, first of all, diagnose, and second of all, how we look to prevent or look for strategies to overcome those kind of issues that we encounter, whether that's in school, in our peer groups, or outside. So there's a number of misconceptions just around mental health versus mental well-being. I think that's probably a really good starting point today, so we can kind of learn how to overcome them, really.
Thank you ever so much. Thank you. Mary, can I turn to you now? Would you mind expanding on my introduction and give us a bit of background, perhaps about how you've come into the field and how you're involved in this area?
OK, so thank you. I guess if I just start by saying that I've spent most of my career working in specialist mental health services as a psychological therapist. I'm a drama therapist by training, and I've done other sort of talking therapy trainings since taking on the work of working in eating disorders, community settings, inpatient units, GP surgeries, etc. So I stepped out of my role in the NHS about a year ago to set up this limited company where I'm working with people from all walks of life in therapy and supervision and training. So that's a little bit about me. But what's much more interesting is coming on to what Tom was just saying about mental health and well-being. And I guess I was sort of listening to you, Tom, and I was thinking, as you were talking, I was thinking, it's so interesting because I bet if we asked 100 people how they would define mental health and well-being, they would we would get a whole load of different responses. And so I reckon what I would love to do, if it's OK, is just offer you my understanding of what that means and where mental health is, if that's OK. Because I think what you were pointing towards, Tom, there was almost like the difference between someone who has a diagnosis of mental ill health and somebody who is experiencing fluctuating moods. Is that right, Tom?
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Okay. So this is how it looks to me, and this is a model that you can. I wonder if people who are listening just want to close your eyes for a minute and imagine the sun, which we should all be able to do, having just left the summer holidays. So if you imagine that there is a sunshine in the sky, and then there are clouds that come and go over the sunshine, and some of those clouds contain rain. Some of them create a thunderstorm, lightning. Sometimes it's a clear blue sky and you can see the sunshine super clearly. And sometimes you absolutely, especially in the middle of the night, cannot see the sun. But all the time, we know that the sun is there. Now, that is how I think about mental health. That it's always there, but we sure as hell do not always experience it. We can't always see it and we can't always feel it. Because the clouds that cover it, which you can think of as our thoughts and our feelings, absolutely create a completely different internal reality and create, therefore, a completely different seeming sky. It would be understandable, wouldn't it, for an alien to arrive on the planet in the middle of the night and not believe us when we say that there is a bright, shining sun in the sky. It would be understandable. And actually, we do this sometimes as humans. It's raining and we think, oh, it's going to rain forever. And we forget what it's like to be in the middle of summer because we haven't experienced it for a while. And that's a little bit like what it's like for people who aren't feeling connected to or aware of or hearing from their mental health. Doesn't mean it's gone, but they may not have experienced the warmth of it for quite some time. And that's when we might start talking about diagnosis and mental ill health. So the way it looks to me, guys, is that it's exactly what's happening, is that we all have mental health within, but our experiences, maybe our experiences from birth, sometimes even before birth, sometimes in the womb, we experience felt experience in our body, which means that we don't know that we've got mental health and we certainly don't feel connected to it. And so the work that I do, whether it's with individuals, groups, children or adults, wherever anyone's from, is point towards ways of understanding, hearing from and recognizing mental health. And at the same time as that, get really, really curious about the clouds that are covering it. So it's not about saying, oh, you're fine, you've got well-being. It's always there, because someone sitting underneath a massive storm cloud is not going to find that helpful at all. So it's about saying, let me get really, really clear with you about what's covering your mental health. Let me understand what your experience looks like, what your experience has been, what thoughts create your reality, what your negative core beliefs are, what you think and feel about yourself, about the world, about relationships, about all of this stuff. Let's get really curious about that. But at the same time, and this, Helen, is where I would say it's almost like a paradigm shift in an approach to mental health. I would be saying you have it. You don't need to go and find mental health. It's about uncovering it, not going outside of you to search for it. So a lot of the time people will understandably and absolutely with good intent talk about things to go and do to give you mental health. Like, well, if you want to improve your mental health, you need to go and do exercise, or you need to go and do yoga, or you need to do mindfulness or meditation or journaling, or, you know, the list is endless. And there's nothing wrong with that list. It's just that there is no such thing as a list that works for everybody. But what there is the fact that everybody does have that ability to connect with their mental health. But the way that they do it is going to be as unique as that human is. So I think a lot of the confusion comes around when we talk about mental health and well-being. The confusion comes around someone saying something like, well, I've tried meditation and it didn't work. Or I've tried exercise and I still felt awful. Or I've tried going on holiday and I sat on the beach and my head was just as busy as it was when I was at work. And then what can happen is that people, because of that innocent misunderstanding of where well-being is coming from, what can happen is that people go, so therefore there's something wrong with me, or I'm beyond help. And it isn't that at all. It's just that you perhaps don't understand where the well-being is coming from. Because if we think it's coming from outside of us, if we think the well-being should come from a spa day, or come from the person that normally makes us feel better, or come from listening to our favorite piece of music, then we're going to be really disappointed when that doesn't work for us, or doesn't work for us sometimes. And so instead, it's about turning the gaze inwards.
So it's really quite unhelpful when people start labeling themselves as anxious, or I've got poor mental health and that kind of thing. How specifically would you start to, and this is to Tom or Mary, how would you start to work with people and try and get them to see themselves and in that unique way, so that it's not about working your way through a checklist? Where would you start?
So if I can just come in on that, Helen, if that's okay. It's not that it's always unhelpful. I wouldn't say it is always unhelpful to give yourself a label, because it might be that in acknowledging your anxiety, you are actually acknowledging the storm cloud for the first time. And acknowledging how you actually feel in your body and in your experience is definitely the starting place. If we are just denying how we feel, we're denying our anxiety, we're denying our burnout, we're denying our stress, then that's a little bit like putting a massive plaster with nail varnish over a gaping wound. So I would say that the starting point is going, well, what is actually going on for you right now? How are you actually experiencing yourself, the world, your relationships? And then, so that's the starting place. But I think what you were pointing towards, perhaps, Helen, is that we're trying to hold both in mind. We're trying to hold a balance in mind. So if we get to a point where we're like, or we're saying something like, I am an anxious person, and we totally identify all of our experience with anxiety, then what might happen is that we might miss the times in which we don't feel quite as anxious, or where we feel a little bit calmer, or we feel a little bit more confident. So we're looking all the time to balance, acknowledging and validating the cloud, acknowledging and validating the sun. Does that make sense?
That's brilliant. Thank you. Tom, would you mind briefly elaborating on perhaps as a school where we would start in supporting young people who are starting to, like Mary said, acknowledge that they've got difficulties and struggles?
Yeah, absolutely. And just to kind of reiterate Mary's point there, really, I think looking at somebody's root cause, I guess, and what these kind of stresses or these stressors are causing, and what the reason is for them is understanding kind of the root of the feelings, I guess, and why we react to certain situations and certain things in a certain way, I guess. So I think, first of all, it's about the understanding. And for me at the school, it's a real important role of mine, and a really privileged role of mine, to educate students on the difference between mental health versus mental well-being. Now we're through that, it's about kind of making it explicit about what we do as a school, what we do as a community, what we do as people, essentially, to support each other, to help each other through the times when actually they are going to be more stressful than not working in a school environment, for example, exams, for example, being unfamiliar situations. That could be in playing sport, it could be through performing arts, it could be through music, it could be anything that we feel uncomfortable with. And actually, it's allowing students and ensuring students are comfortable feeling uncomfortable. And I feel like it's fine for those to have those feelings, but it's my job and our job, as teachers and practitioners, to give them the facilitating tools to progress. So for example, if I'm looking at a year seven student, I feel the tools I need to kind of provide those will be different to a year 11 student who's about to leave us, really, and go on to post 16 or whatever that may be in terms of their career. So I think it's really important that there's not one size fits all. I think actually it's about knowing each and individual student. So 1,026 students who come to the King's School. It's about each individual having a real understanding about what we're trying to achieve and supporting them, facilitating them to help them achieve that, really.
Thank you ever so much. Now, because this is a topic that is so close to so many, we actually went out and we asked a number of students what were the questions that they would like to ask around mental health and wellbeing. So, question, my first question from a student: how would you tell the difference between depression and sadness, Mary?
So if I just start with a little bit of a quote from Jim Carrey here. Jim Carrey talks about his depression, which he suffered, as deep rest. He says, think about depression as deep rest from the avatar that you've been trying to hold up to the world. So when I think about depression, when I'm working with people who are suffering from depression, it's that it's almost like an entirely all-encompassing, felt, embodied experience of, it's like, enough. I cannot, you know, there's a reason that people feel like they can't, you know, even wake up, brush their teeth, get dressed, because something in their system is saying, actually, something really seriously needs to change. Something, whether that's the way that I'm trying to present myself to the world, whether it's the identity that I'm trying to maintain, whether it's a relationship I'm trying to maintain, whatever it was that triggered that need for deep rest, that's how I think about depression. And sadness, I think, is a little bit like a cloud, right? And it's horrible when you're really rained on and you can get super cold, but it's more likely to come and go than depression. Depression can come and go. It does go. It absolutely can be something that people fully recover from when they've really understood the root cause of it. Whereas sadness is a bit like happenstance. It comes and it goes. And one thing I just want to sort of pull on what Tom just said, which I thought was really beautiful, was when he said, yeah, one of our jobs at King's is to help people feel comfortable with feeling uncomfortable. And I would say that is such an important point to expand upon, because sadness, it's like, it's got to be okay for you to feel sad. Don't feel sad about feeling sad. It's okay to feel sad. You don't need to feel anxious about feeling anxious. You don't need to feel uncomfortable about feeling uncomfortable. You know, these are all feelings that are part of the human experience. And the more worried we get about being worried, the more anxious we get about being anxious, the more sad we feel about the fact that we feel sad, the more that's going to last. So normalizing that fluid, fluctuating weather that is our feelings is so important. Sounds like you guys are doing an amazing job of that at school.
I just want to pick up on a phrase that you just used. When you talk about normalizing that fluctuation of emotion, what do you mean by that?
I mean, let's understand that there is a reason that we have feelings. You know, it's not a problem in and of itself that we feel anxious, for example. And I talk about it like this. You know, if you were to be by a fire, let's say a kid was by a fire and they were to put their finger near a flame, it would hurt. And they would pull back from that. The pain would be a signal, an indication to them that they needed to step back from that fire. And that is what our feelings are trying to do for us, Helen, is that they are trying to signal something to us. So when we understand what I would call the psychological immune system, when we understand how the psychological immune system actually works in our favor, i.e. there's a reason that we're feeling anxious, and it will normally be because we have transported ourselves psychologically from the present to the future. Now that anxiety is there to tell us, hang on a minute, you're hanging out on next Tuesday night and it's Saturday morning. You know, the anxiety is trying to help us by bringing our attention to the fact that we're trying to solve a problem that we don't yet have that we're not yet in. That's just an example. There's so much we could talk about. We could do a whole podcast on the psychological immune system, but normalizing our feelings and actually getting to the point where we're grateful that we have sadness, anxiety, fear, because actually they're trying to keep us alive and they're trying to keep us safe. It would be where I would take that.
Wonderful. Thank you ever so much. A couple more questions then. We had quite a few who asked similar things. So they were around this idea of how do you spot when somebody is struggling and how do you then support them?
Again, that's about relationship. All of this is about connection and relationship. You know, when you're in a relationship with somebody, and whether that's a friendship or a boyfriend and girlfriend or, you know, a family relationship, you kind of get to know people, don't you? And then you can spot when they're not acting like themselves. So I suppose the thing to say here is connection is key. Getting to know people and offering people, having friendships with people will allow you to spot when they're suffering. When we isolate ourselves, and that's exactly what happened during COVID, is that people's mental ill health and their clouds increased because they were isolated. You know, and then we're meant to be with each other. We're meant to connect with each other. We're here to support one another, like, you know, in our tribes and in our packs. So actually isolating ourselves and feeling and therefore being able to put this mask up to the world, I'm fine, is so damaging to us experiencing our inner sunshine, because we can trick people because they don't know us. So the thing here is, how do we identify? We have relationships, we talk to each other, and we as much as possible get comfortable with feeling uncomfortable and sharing our vulnerabilities and telling each other what's actually going on, as opposed to what we think should be going on or what we hope, what we wish was going on in our lives or what we wish we felt. So this is about being, you know, radically honest with each other, not living an Instagram filtered, you know, isn't my life and isn't my, you know, isn't my friendship group perfect, and actually going, do you know what, no, I don't feel like that today, and being vulnerable with each other. Vulnerability is the key to experiencing mental health.
Yeah,
even though people will think it's the opposite of that.
Yeah, it's awkward, isn't it? You know, you spend time with someone, you're sat down having a drink with someone, and they say, oh, how are you getting on? And it takes a lot to actually say, you know what, I don't feel good at the moment, things aren't right with me, because that then opens a can of worms potentially, doesn't it?
It does. If you feel like you've got, you know, like if when someone starts saying that they're not feeling good, if you think your job is to solve that for them or fix it for them or try and give them the tools that they need to feel better, then yeah, you might feel really nervous about asking that question. And if you, as the person who's being honest and saying you've had a bad day, also think that you need somebody to fix it for you, solve it for you, and give you your answers, then you probably won't share. But if we all understand as humans, when we all understand as humans that everybody has sun and everybody has clouds, and actually one of the most helpful things that you can do for another human is sit under an umbrella with them and say, I'm with you, I'm hearing you, I'm holding a space for you, I'm listening. Do you know what? That is the most important thing that I can ever do for someone who comes to me, is absolutely listen. Not listen to fix, not listen to solve, not listen to jump in with my brilliant ideas that I got during my degree, but just listen to them. Because when people feel heard, then they feel understood, then they feel connection, and connection creates mental health. Or connection parts the clouds. So it's simpler than we all think. It's about going, gosh, that sounds really difficult. Full stop. I can see you're upset. Full stop. You don't have to jump in with all your top tips and all your ideas, because anyway, they're the ideas that worked for you. They might well not work for your mate.
Yeah. Thank you ever so much. Just to finish off this podcast then, Mary, if there was one thing that you wanted people to take away from what they've heard today, could you summarise what you think that would be?
I would say, Try not to be scared of your experience, because your experience, whatever that is, whether that's sadness, depression, anxiety, low mood, fear, it's trying to teach you something. And so if you can get really curious with somebody that you do feel safe with about what that is trying to point you towards, then that's when you go on the treasure hunt for your health. And it's there. It's not there for some people. It's there for everybody. It's just that you might not have found your key into it yet. And that's my joy, Helen, in my work, is to help people find the key that works for them to unlock their door. But it isn't that there isn't a door, and it isn't that there isn't sun. And that's the message, I guess.
Brilliant. Thank you ever so much, Mary. Thank you to everyone who's listened. Thank you for joining us on this episode of The King's Cast.